It is Thursday, February 7th, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas. Support for KUAF comes from the Rogers Historical Museum, offering real objects, true stories, family fun, and lifelong learning. Current exhibits include Benton County crime stories, Building Rogers, and to cap it all off, an exhibit on hats and hat making. Located in historic downtown Rogers, 621-1154, or rogersarkansas.com/museum.
Ahead on Ozarks, we conclude our two-part series on guns. Jacqueline Brolick examines how people in our region are reacting to the gun discussions in the wake of the school shootings in Connecticut in December.
We also have a preview of tomorrow's business luncheon forecast in Rogers and talk to a member of the cast of Memphis. Bill Perry plays the owner of a radio station in 1950s Memphis as rock and roll and rhythm and blues begin to capture the attention of young listeners.
This congressional delegation is reacting to the news that the U.S. Postal Service will end Saturday mail deliveries. Republican Congressman Rick Crawford says ending Saturday deliveries by the Postal Service is not the best option and would hurt many rural constituents whose lifeline to the outside world is the Postal Service. Meanwhile, Congressman Tim Griffin of the 2nd Congressional District worries small business owners who rely on timely delivery to rural areas could feel the impact, but he says the move is necessary to stop the bleeding.
The government needs to be frank with people. This is what happens when government doesn't adapt, doesn't innovate, and doesn't change. We can't continue to lose. The post office can't continue to lose the money that it loses. Going to have to make some changes.
The U.S. Senate in April voted for a plan that would have continued Saturday service for at least 2 years, and both Arkansas senators had voted for that legislation. The House, however, never voted on the measure. Democratic U.S. Senator Mark Pryor says due to the House's inaction, Postal Service is now facing crippling deficits. He says he agrees the Postal Service needs to cut costs, but adds he would prefer this be done through alternative measures like capping salaries of top executives or eliminating bonuses. Meanwhile, Republican U.S. Senator John Bozeman says while he's disappointed the Postal Service is changing its delivery service, the financial strain of losing nearly $16 billion last year should not come at the expense of the needs of Arkansans. However, he offered no suggested measures at curbing the Postal Service's deficit.
The state is on its way to having a new execution law. The State Judiciary Committee yesterday approved a bill that says how executions in the state must be carried out. The previous law was struck down by the state Supreme Court, which said it gave too much authority to the Department of Corrections. Attorney General Dustin McDaniel says the new bill is the state's best shot at fixing the legislation, but he expects further legal battles no matter what is passed. If the law passes, he says 8 death row inmates will be up for execution.
We have 8 inmates on death row currently whose appeals are exhausted, whose remedies are exhausted. And if we have a constitutionally sound method of execution that the courts won't stop, then yes, I will send a letter to the governor asking that he sign death warrants.
The bill passed unanimously. No one spoke against it.
Members of the Arkansas House listened to Governor Mike Beebe give a few remarks yesterday in support of a $125 million investment in a $1 billion steel mill that's planned for Osceola. The governor says he wasn't going to make a sales pitch or pressure lawmakers about the proposal.
They approach it from different angles, and when they approach it, usually they come down on the side of sound accounting and tax-based principles on what's good. And what's worth it? And what's the return on the investment? What's the repayment to our taxpayers? What is good for Arkansas? And so we've used that approach in virtually any of these projects that we pursue.
After Governor Beebe's remarks, economic development officials spoke with House lawmakers about what the state stands to gain or lose by investing in the project. Governor Beebe talked with state senators about the plan on Monday. The $125 million financing package for the mill is subject to legislative approval.
The Upstream Art Project that last year brought art and awareness to a number of storm drains in northwest Arkansas is making a return this year. The project involves artists volunteering their time to paint murals at selected storm drains. The murals are aimed at raising public awareness about the connectedness of storm drains to areas' streams and creeks. Jane Maganot, the Water Quality Program Associate with the U of A Division of Agriculture, says the Water Stream Awareness Project was popular enough last year to warrant its return this year.
Last year we got great response from people on the streets. We took pictures of the art and then took them on public displays and things at events such as Artisphere. and we had people give us their feedback. And we actually think it was a great project that was worth repeating again this year. We actually have permission from the cities to expand the project to do 14 storm drains this year.
Last year, the project saw 8 storm drains in Fayetteville, Springdale, Rogers, and Bentonville, brightened with multicolored murals. Aside from including more locations in the project this year, Maginot says that the murals will further emphasize the project's educational intent.
So we're asking the artist this year to put in the words in their design, drains to creek. If that's not in there, we actually have a stencil that'll go next to the art just to help relay that educational message. And then we also have those QR codes, those little square codes, black and white pictures that we have a laminate that goes with the art that will take that back to our website to help promote that educational message.
Maginot says that anyone interested in participating in the project can contact her by phone at the U of A Cooperative Extension Service in Fayetteville.
The National Child Protection Training Center at Northwest Arkansas Community College yesterday received some support from area organizations. During a ceremony at the Bentonville Public Library, the center received $44,500 from 4 Benton County Rotary Clubs. The contributions go toward the center's $3 million campaign for renovation, furnishing, and transformation of the former Highlands Oncology Building into a facility for the Melba Shoemaker Southern Region National Child Protection Training Center. When complete, the renovated space will feature dedicated lab facilities for the center, including a 2-story mock home, mock courtrooms, child forensic interview rooms, a practice medical exam room, and flexible use spaces to train child abuse professionals. So far, the fundraising campaign has reached 85% of its $3 million goal. Officials hope to start the renovation later this year.
Forecast tonight calls for a 40% chance for showers before midnight and low around 31 in northwest Arkansas. A 50% chance for showers before midnight and low around 40 in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow, sunny with highs in the mid to upper 50s. Tomorrow night, mostly clear with lows in the lower 30s. Either you own a gun, are looking to own a gun, or will never own a gun. And in the aftermath of the horrific Connecticut Elementary School massacre last December, federal and state lawmakers are looking at ways to more effectively arm or disarm you. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich provides a roundup.
Late last month, a Charlottesville, Virginia man made national news after casually carrying a loaded semi-automatic rifle into the local Kroger. Frightened patrons scattered, some dialing 911. Police arrived, drawing their guns. The man instantly yielded, saying his weapon was permitted. When questioned, the 22-year-old told officials he was making a Second Amendment point about our constitutional right to bear arms. And lots of people right now are purchasing lots of arms.
This would be, for instance, most right here is your Smith & Wesson M&P model.
Clint Cornett operates CNS Gun Shop and Pawn on Thompson Street in Springdale. He's been a gun dealer for nearly 40 years.
It's a 40 caliber, or we have them in 9mm. You can get them full size, 5-inch, or down to 3.5-inch, depending on where you want to conceal it, how you want to carry it.
Since President Barack Obama laid down the gauntlet on gun control January 15th in a White House speech, 1 month after the mass shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary in Newtown, Connecticut, where 20 children and 6 adults were killed, sales have gone exponential.
It has been super. We've probably up 400 to 500%. We're having trouble ordering what we need. We could do a lot more than that if we could get the product. We're running low on several handguns, assault type weapons. They sold out early. So we're just having more trouble getting items in than we are anything else. Our sales are great.
Clint Cornett's a federally licensed gun dealer, so with every purchase, he must conduct a customer background check. But registering guns is optional, as are background checks at gun shows, where individual vendors are not required to conduct them. That's why the Obama administration is calling for universal background checks for all gun sales, public and private. Newly released FBI data show that nearly 2.8 million background checks were conducted in December alone, setting an all-time record. January was the second highest month with 2.5 million checks.
I do like the background check here for myself. It kind of takes the liability off of me.
individuals convicted of domestic abuse or felony crime cannot legally purchase a gun. And Cornett says all new gun owners need to be coached.
What feels right in their hand, what they feel like they can shoot. And we always recommend they go to their local shooting range and take some with them that knows, or go take the training course for concealed carry, which you get the training right there. We firmly believe you should know how to use a weaponry if you're going to own one.
Consumers are purchasing guns in a hurry because they worry the Obama administration and gun control advocates will limit gun ownership choices. But the president is only asking Congress to reinstate a ban on military-style assault weapons and to limit high-capacity ammunition magazines. Still, gun sales have exploded across the nation. Even Walmart, the largest gun retailer in the United States, announced it had to limit sales of ammunition to keep shelves stocked. CNS gun shop owner Clint Cornett sees why. Cornett purchases most of his new guns from a Connecticut manufacturer, but soon he'll be able to source inventory in Arkansas.
Well, guns are made all over the United States. Most of your guns are made in the eastern states in Connecticut. However, we're going to have Walther in Fort Smith, Arkansas, real soon. They're going to start their manufacturing of Walther Company, which is a large company in Fort Smith, which is great. But most of your guns are manufactured in in Connecticut.
In late 2012, Walther Arms, a German-owned company, announced plans to build a $7 million plant at Chaffee Crossing, east of Fort Smith. Concealed gun carry permits have also risen, those allowing gun owners to carry or transport loaded weapons for any distance out of plain sight. Openly carrying a gun is prohibited in Arkansas, one of seven states to have such a law. The Arkansas State Police, which has no jurisdictional authority over the purchasing of firearms, provides concealed handgun information and licensing as a regulatory service. But to obtain a permit, you must pass a safety instruction course and pay a hefty fee. Arkansas State Police Public Information Officer Bill Sadler.
Getting the necessary classroom and practical exercise training with the firearm in the presence of the instructor who is certified by the state. And that instructor then works closely with the applicant in submitting the application, which then begins to transition into an administrative process administered by the state police, involving a very thorough background check that even goes into FBI files and federal Justice Department files. And then a review by the administrator of the concealed handgun licensing section.
Once you've secured a concealed handgun permit, you can purchase another gun without having to go through any checks. And by law, you can transport the gun across state borders. In certain states, the concealed gun permit will require periodic renewal. In late 2008, Arkansas counted more than 70,000 concealed carry permits. By the end of 2012, that number had nearly doubled. In Arkansas, concealed guns are not allowed in police facilities, courthouses, polling places, political offices, athletic events, places where alcohol is served or sold, churches, public gatherings, and college campuses. But those rules are quickly changing. Republican State Representative Charlie Collins, District 84 Fayetteville, has filed a bill to allow concealed licensed staff and faculty to bring their handguns on college campuses.
We create gun-free zones. And these killers know that. They know that it's less likely they'll be stopped there. They understand it's very difficult for law enforcement to arrive before they wreak their havoc on innocent people. And they believe that they can accomplish their horrible objectives.
Collins proposed the measure last session, he said, but this time he has a good shot at seeing it pass. Republican State Senator Brian King, District 5, Green Forest, also filed a concealed carry bill last session. But this year, King's Church Protection Act, which allows parishioners to carry concealed guns into churches, sailed through this 2013 legislature and is expected to be signed by Governor Mike Beebe. Gun rights advocates are thrilled with all the attention the president's gun control agenda has brought to their groups, including Arkansas Carry. Spokesperson and board member Nicholas Staley lives in Benton.
You know, it's really unlike anything I've ever seen.
Members of Arkansas Carry have long advocated for the enactment of open carry in Arkansas. That's the right to carry a loaded weapon in plain sight. A bill in support of open carry was introduced last legislative session in 2011, but failed to progress. Staley hopes one will pass through this assembly.
You know, there's been activity already, and we've got a whole month left of filing, so we anticipate that open carry and at least one or two other bills will at some point be filed.
Republican State Senator Missy Irvin, District 18, Mountain View, filed a bill to fund public school safety programs, including placing armed guards on campuses. And in answer to the federal call for increased disclosure on gun ownership, Republican State Senator Bruce Holland, District 9, Greenwood, sponsored a bill to shield the privacy of concealed handgun carry license holders, exempting them from the freedom of information searches. Stand and fight is the emblazoned motto on the National Rifle Association website.
Never fight if you can avoid it. But when you must fight, don't lose. And when nothing less than freedom is at stake, we fight. We're millions of people just like you. We're the longest standing civil rights organization in the U.S. Proud defenders of history's patriots. Protectors of the Second Amendment.
National Rifle Association was chartered in 1871. It counts 4.2 million members today, a quarter of a million of those joining just this last month. The glittering NRA Digital Network website features a scrolling breaking news feed on gun legislation taking place across the country, including Arkansas's gun rights measures. Most notably, Republican Representative Richard Womack, District 18, Arkadelphia. On January 23rd, he sponsored a resolution to preserve rights guaranteed by the Second Amendment to the United States Constitution to keep and bear arms. But with 30,000 firearm-related homicides and suicides every year, pro-gun rights advocates will be hard-pressed to defend themselves. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
To learn more about gun rights, visit the National Rifle Association at NRA.org and ArkansasCarry.com. To see President Barack Obama's gun control program, titled Now is the Time, visit the Preventing Gun Violence link on the WhiteHouse.gov page.
The 2013 Business Forecast Luncheon is tomorrow from 11:30 until 1:30 at the John Q. Hammond Center in Rogers. An audience of more than 1,000 is expected to attend to hear a conversation about the possibilities for the world's nations and regions' economic health for the next 12 months. The luncheon is sponsored by the Center for Business and Economic Research at the University of Arkansas. This week, I asked Kathy Deck, the director of the center, about what might be topics of conversation at tomorrow's event.
We look at this event as an opportunity to talk about how the global economic outlook really does impact the nation and then the state and then the local levels as well. And so we have speakers who come in and are expert on all of these different areas, but really it is designed for our audience to be able to take some insights back to their company and make Arkansas businesses and Northwest Arkansas businesses better off.
It's called a forecast luncheon. So a forecast, whether it be the weather or the economy, you know, there's no guarantees here.
That's exactly right. When we talk about forecasts, all good forecasters talk about a range and risk factors and all kinds of other caveats. But we're very pleased with the kind of speakers that we get and the level of forecast insights they're able to provide. Our people who came to the luncheon knew that the recession was going to be a recession before it was called a recession. They knew that the recession was going to end before the recession officially ended. And we think that we are able to provide those insights on a consistent basis because we bring such good folks in.
This may, I don't know if this is properly worded, but can, you know, if you're talking about the world economic picture and you're thinking about Greece and what might happen with the euro, can that be relatable to what's happening in Northwest Arkansas?
When you think about the core businesses that we have here in Northwest Arkansas, our largest employers, of course, are multinational companies. And so they care very, very much about what's happening in their markets and what their potential for growth in those markets is. Our employment base here in Northwest Arkansas, while it may not vary exactly with what happens in Spain, certainly what's going on in Spain is going to filter down eventually into how things happen here.
You're on the panel.
I am on the panel.
Also, Adolfo Laurenti.
Adolfo Laurenti is an economist with Mesirow Financial. He is an expert on the European economy in particular, also the Japanese economy. He'll talk about China. The world is large, and so he will obviously just hit the highlights of that. But we're particularly going to pay attention to Europe right now.
And Christopher Waller.
Christopher Waller is from the St. Louis Federal Reserve Bank. He directs their research there. And so, of course, he has a great deal of insight into what's going on in our financial system and then our economy as a whole.
You have debt ceiling. You have, we're going to hear those words, fiscal cliff ad nauseum, I think, again at some point. That will be part of the conversation as well, wouldn't it?
We will talk about how uncertainty does bad things to the economy. Mm-hmm. And I particularly am going to talk about a lot about confidence, because confidence, although it isn't enough to make your economy go, the lack of confidence really can be detrimental. And when we just are so uncertain about some of the basic things. What is our tax code going to look like? Are we going to, in fact, add spending to programs or subtract it? Those things really do hit our confidence levels, and that's detrimental.
And then confidence can freeze you.
And that's right.
Lack of confidence
absolutely can freeze you. And so you can refuse to make a decision either as a business person or as a community leader just because you're waiting for someone else to make a decision, and that doesn't help any of us out.
Our largest employers in this area are multinational, but there are many employers here who are more local.
There are many employers here who are more local who want to know things like, well, gosh, what is employment going to do in this region? What can we expect from our different sectors? Is construction going to be good or bad? All of those kinds of things. So we really will try to hit the region, the state, the nation, and then the global markets as well.
Concerns, I'm sure, on the western part of the state for sure about manufacturing. We've seen jobs continue to leave the Fort Smith region.
That's right. So we will look at Fort Smith as well. And Fort Smith obviously has been hit hard in the manufacturing sector, but that's not the only place it's been hit. There are those kind of multiplier effects, which we love to talk about when we get new jobs, but they're negative when we see the loss of jobs as well. So the Fort Smith economy has some catching up to do and some restructuring to do, and we will mention that as well.
Confidence, economic confidence is so intriguing to me, so fascinating.
That's right. So if, let's say, an employer believes that things are going to be better next year, then that employer might go out and employ someone new in order to meet that demand that they see coming, which, of course, means that person has a job. They're more likely to go out and spend, and it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. If, on the other hand, an employer believes that things are likely to stay rotten, that they're going to hunker down, the mere fact that they hunker down means that the economy suffers.
Kathy Deck is the director of the Center for Business and Economic Research at the University of Arkansas. The center's 2013 Business Forecast Luncheon is tomorrow, beginning at 11:30 at the John Q. Hammond Center in Rogers. You can learn more at the center's website. That's cber.uark.edu. Just think Center for Business and Economic Research, cbr.uark.edu. Video from the forecast luncheon will also be posted at that website sometime after tomorrow's event.
Early in his career, Beethoven studied with the man who came to be known as the father of the symphony, Joseph Haydn. Haydn may have fathered the symphony, but it was Beethoven who nurtured it, who brought it to fruition. We'll hear the culmination of Beethoven's symphonic work, his Ninth Symphony, on Thursday's Performance Today from APM.
Performance Today, tonight at 8 on KUAF 91.3 FM.
KUAF is supported by Ozark Natural Foods, Northwest Arkansas's consumer-owned food co-op since 1971. Offering local, organic produce and all-natural groceries, bulk foods, health and wellness products, plus a full-service deli. Ozark Natural Foods is located in the Evelyn Hills Shopping Center or on the web at ozarknaturalfoods.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. This week, the Arkansas legislature heard from Governor Mike Beebe and state economic officials about the Big River Steel Mill Super Project. Supporters of the project, to be located near Osceola, say it will create more than 500 jobs. It would also require the legislature to approve a $125 million bond program to aid in the startup costs. It's a first test for Amendment 82, which allows for state-supported bonds to help with infrastructures of big projects. After the presentation, Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business discussed the project with State Senator Bruce Malik, a Democrat from Magnolia and a banker by trade.
I thought it was a good presentation. A lot of questions were answered. Of course, we're to get a written report as well, which will probably have more detail than most of us want to see, but there's still a few questions, but I thought we had a good initial meeting and looking forward to pursuing it further.
Give me a couple of ideas of some questions you think still need to be answered.
Well, of course, the first thing, and that I think is good, is that the equity investors are at about $300 million or so on a $1.1 billion project. You know, usually look when we're looking at business lending, you know, we'll look maybe for a 70% loan to the value of the project or to the cost of the project. Where a home loan, we may go to 90%. So they're close to 30%. That's good. A question that was hinted at or asked that I was interested in was capacity utilization of other steel mills. Now, I had been told, and I had not verified all this, that there were some of the other steel mills in the area, and particularly one down in the Memphis area, that was even below 50% capacity utilization. So the question there is, well, if they're producing the same product, could the other mills just ramp up and have a problem of selling the product? But what the initial indication at least is that this mill, newer, more modern, and will produce a product that's different than the other mills in the area. Steel mills in the country as a whole are running at about 72% capacity utilization. The due diligence that was done on this mill projected at 82%, but still cash flows at 62%. And with the product that they're producing, they seem to be comfortable with that, and initial indications would give me some comfort level with that.
How much pressure is there on you guys to approve this project from the standpoint of, we want Arkansas to be friendly to big business? If we throw up too many roadblocks on this deal, we're going to send the signal that we're not very open for business. Is that there?
There's a balance on that, like there is in everything else. I've even heard Grant Tenniel, the AEDC director, say that, you know, he wishes we didn't have all these incentives. But the fact of the matter is, every state has them, and so you've got to play that game. You've got to look at the payback to the state. I think you consider their options of going somewhere else, which I do think they have other options. John Shelnut with the Department of Finance and Administration testified that the state's payback would be in the 4 to 6 year range, depending on how soon they paid back that first $50 million. And I know we haven't talked about specifics on this, but most people are aware of that. And so I think it's a relatively quick payback. With the job that it produces, the ancillary business that it produces, again, initial inclination or indications to me is that it's a project that's good for the state, but still we have a due diligence requirement that's set forth under the enabling legislation of Amendment 82, and so that's what we're doing. We will hire our own consultant, the legislature will, to look at some of the reports that are out there to give us further advice, but so far I'm liking what I see.
$125 million bond deal for the $1.1 billion project that's going to create 525 direct jobs, hopefully more through ancillary businesses,
right,
and beyond. Is that the best expense of $125 million? I could hear some people making arguments that if you were to put that in the hands of small businesses or entrepreneurs, you might create more jobs than 525. Is that part of the debate?
Well, it's a fair question. And, you know, we've never, well, this is the first Amendment 82 type project that we've had that's the 500 plus jobs and 500 million plus, actually over a billion, as you mentioned. You break that down, and in many ways, I'd rather have more 50 to 100 job industries than maybe one big one, because you've got the chance of that one closing down. But with the investment and the product that they're going to produce, it's going to be awfully tough. I mean, I know there are market forces at play, but you know, I think it's going to be good for the state. But you raise a good question, and you know, I love those smaller industries too. It just seems that the big ones are the ones that attract the attention of the state.
Yeah.
And of course, we're looking at others.
Roby Brock talked to State Senator Bruce Malik, a Democrat from Magnolia, about the proposed Big River Steel Mill Super Project. This week, Governor Mike Beebe made his pitch for the project to the Arkansas legislature. You can see and hear more from the conversation at talkbusiness.net. Support for TalkBusiness.net on Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from four offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com.
And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at BankOzarks.com. And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity, backed up with fuel diversity. More at AECC.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
We're inside the Firm and Garner Performance Studio today. Jody Beznoska is with us from Walton Arts Center. Hello,
yes.
Jody. And a special guest, Bill Perry, who is from the cast of Memphis. Welcome.
Glad to be here.
Jody?
Yes.
We usually go over what's coming up.
Should we do that quickly?
Let's do that
so
quickly.
So we can
yes.
get to the stuff that's really important.
Well.
Sure. Well, we have Memphis, of course, which is here in town, and I'm sure we'll talk at length about that in the next couple of minutes. But Theater Squared begins their third show of the season next week. I believe their preview night is the 14th, and they open on the 15th. And this is Sons of the Prophet. It runs for 3 weeks.
Yes.
It might be 3 or 4 weeks. And I understand there was a great Playwrights Forum.
Stephen Karam, the playwright, was here, Pulitzer finalist for this script, and is maybe all of 33 years old.
Oh,
and
wow.
It was just a great standing room only event over across the street at the library.
That'll
be on our show next week.
Yeah, the play is funny. It's a comedy, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so that is next week for Theater Squared. That'll be in the Nadine Baum Studios. And then that same weekend, it's going to be a busy weekend. Wow. We will have Potted Potter, the unauthorized Harry Potter experience happening. Four shows of that on the 16th and the 17th. Those tickets are not surprisingly, those are going really well. So get those now if you don't want to miss out on that. At the same time, we'll have the Grace Kelly Quintet playing in the Star Theater. And, of course, Grace Kelly is the sort of wonder kid, young saxophonist who has just been tearing it up and winning all kinds of awards. And she'll have her group. She'll have two shows in the Star Theater at 7 and 9 o'clock. And then on the 19th, we will have The Little Prince, a wonderful show for kids. I learned something really neat about the story of The Little Prince. The person who wrote it, the man who wrote it, he crashed, his plane crashed. And then that was the inspiration, or he started to write the story based on that. So I think that's pretty
neat. Yes, he was a French aviator.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great story.
I just learned that. I thought that was fascinating. It was really cool. And then we'll have Hair, February 22nd through the 23rd. I think that's only three performances of that, and that is the new touring version of the revival that was on Broadway a couple years ago. And then let's just look ahead real quick. Since we're in Broadway mode, we'll look ahead to Anything Goes in April from the 9th through the 14th. And then way ahead into May, you really want to get this on your calendar. And I'm thinking about it because one of the producers of Memphis was also a producer of this show, War Horse, which is going to be here in May. And it's sort of we're all just giggling. We're so excited that show's coming. So that was the quick rundown, but now let's talk about Memphis.
Memphis, six more shows during this run, beginning tonight.
Yeah.
Bill Perry is with us, and you are the radio station owner.
Yes.
And you have this sort of unique role because you represent the old guard, maybe even the wrong side of history with your character somewhat. You're not a villain, but you are the staid character. You could play cartoonish, but you don't at all. Play it with humanity.
Good. I'm glad it doesn't come across that way. But he's sort of the grumpy old white guy. But there are people in the show. There are the white faction in the show that represents the group of people in Memphis, Tennessee that are throwing the N-word around a lot. And my character isn't that guy. He's kind of trying to find his way through the changes that he can see coming. But, I mean, he's a bit resistant to them. He doesn't know how to fold them in. But
But he's the first one to give Huey his break, right?
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. He does give him a job.
He realizes commerce is at work here.
That's, that's the whole ticket, really. And it was interesting because it's loosely based on this DJ that was in Memphis, Dewey Phillips. Mm-hmm. And a similar thing happened to him. And it's loosely based on that part of his life, not the romantic part of his life. But he was selling records in a W.T. Grants, which was like a five and dime at that time. And he just couldn't get arrested. He couldn't get a job anywhere else. Really wanted to be on radio, and he would play these records. And he had this patter that everyone loved. He talked faster than anyone on earth. And one of the radio station owners came down one night. They all knew him because they would bring records down every now and then and have him play them to sell them. And he said, "Dewey, why don't you stop by the station? And I'll show you around," you know, kind of throwing him a bone. So he did. He brought a couple of records with him. And the guy, it's a radio station at night. There's three people there. And he takes him into the booth. He shows him how it's working. He says, "This is the on-off switch. This is how you go on the air. This is the volume and stuff." So literally, Dewey Phillips walks out into the lobby, sits there for a minute, lights a fire in the trash can. The smoke starts billowing up. And he waits. And the people come running. And he just kind of sneaked into the booth, locked himself in, went on the air. And that's mirrored in our show.
Oh, my gosh.
You see that toward the beginning of our show, the feeling of that. And people started calling in. And some of them were kind of outraged at the kind of music he was playing on mainstream on radio. But a lot of people were calling in, particularly young people, that really were excited about what they heard.
Yeah.
The guy gave him a little spot on the air, and within a year, he was the number one DJ in Memphis, Tennessee.
That's
and
just
he
like
was
the show.
One of about three DJs in the country in the very early 50s, like 49 to 52, that helped bring what became sort of rock and roll, but more than that, what was rhythm and blues music, came up into the middle of the dial, broadcasting, having radius of 50, 60, 100, 200 miles,
right.
End of the dial, you could maybe reach 1 mile, mile and a half. And that's where all the black stations were at that time. So, and commerce did it, you're right, because the advertisers realized, oh, we can, you know, we can make money here. People are listening. They're going to actually listen to this music. So, made a huge difference. He didn't set out, he didn't do it for that reason. He did it because he loved that music, and he was who he was, but really great things came from what he started.
Yeah, and Memphis became this hub of white artists and black artists sharing music.
That's for sure. Yeah. That's for sure.
Well, my question has less to do about the show and more to do about what it's like being on the show.
Huh.
I've never had the opportunity to speak with somebody that's part of a touring production. Mm-hmm. So I heard that you've been on the road for a year and a half.
That's just about right.
Yeah, what is it like? To be on the road. Do you know where you are yet?
I've been in this business a long time. I'm 65. I started when I was 24. I've only been on two other tours. And those tours, we would go into cities and stay for a month, sometimes 2 or 3 months. So this is a very new experience for me, going week to week. The downside of it is rolling into another city on a Monday, unpacking in your hotel, kind of sitting on the edge of the bed for a minute and saying, "Yeah, you get kind of do a Peggy Lee thing, you know? Is that all there is?" But that really is the worst of it, and the best of it is there are a lot of pluses, and one of them is this cast. It is a great group of people. I'm not saying that just because I'm sitting here. It's a wonderful group of people to travel with and work with. And the other part is telling the story. It's a story worthwhile. I mean, I know that audiences are moved by it.
Mm-hmm.
We've had really great reaction around the country. And the third thing is it is great fun to go to different cities. And I do enjoy that. I enjoy that a lot. I enjoy getting out and kind of trying to – I don't do it in every city, but I would say 8 out of 10 really trying to see what there is to see. Meeting people that live there. And it's been great.
You know, you look at your resume and 4 original Sondheim casts, the original Jesus Christ Superstar. You're on record. You sing. You dance. In this play, you don't get to until the end. I don't know if this happens every night, but the Encore Tuesday night, you're up there and it's kind of the – the roll call, all of a sudden you just like bust a move and you're having this great fun. Is it somewhat frustrating to be a song and dance man who does?
Well, I'm not really a song and dance man. I have sung a lot in my life. I've been in a lot of musicals. I can move. I can move to rhythm. Not a dancer. And yes, I do kind of bust it out there at the end of the curtain call. I think if that went on for another 30 seconds, I'd probably collapse. But it's great fun. We were opened in Memphis, Tennessee, and we were there for a couple of weeks. We were into the second week of our, of doing the shows. And I was standing there one night next to Will Mann, who plays Bobby in the show, big man, about 6'2", big guy. He's standing there, and he's a black man, and I'm this white guy, and we've had this whole racial thing throughout the whole show. And he was doing something about pointing to the audience or something, and I kind of mimicked him, like, "What are you doing?" And he looked at me, and we just started dancing together. And I thought, this is kind of fun. This is going to be, he's one of my good pals on the show.
Well, you mentioned that you've been in the business for a long time, but how has the business changed over the years?
It's a long answer, but the short of it is that a large part of it has come to do with the way shows are put together, how much money it takes to produce a show, to produce a musical, a new musical, average new musical between, I would think I'm right in saying between $12 and $16 million, which means that you have to get a pretty good sizable conglomerate of people producing a show. When I came into the business, you opened a program for a Broadway show, above the title there are always the producers. There were maybe three names, two or three names. Now there are 6, 7, 8, 10 names. It does take a village. Mm-hmm. It isn't necessarily a good thing, only in that the artistic focus of how a show is created can get diffused.
You have more interests to please and more
exactly.
people that need to make a profit.
And when that happens, the danger is that things just get watered down. Stories get watered down. The intensity of a piece. The piece that a writer and a composer, they had in their soul that they were writing originally, it might not end up being on that page, on that stage when opening night comes, because there have been so many forces sort of pulling at it, saying, "Well, what about this? I'm not sure that I think this works. We need to reshape this. I've got my people. They're not happy about et cetera, et cetera, et cetera." Mm-hmm. So that has made a real difference in what the entertainment becomes, and there's a difference between that and what theater is, I think, sometimes and oftentimes. So that's a big, broad brushstroke answer, but that's part
yes, it's a big question.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, finally, one last question. One of my favorite things that I ever heard on Prairie Home Companion was 6-Minute Hamlet. And imagine my surprise when I found out that you were part of that.
So many people have loved that. I've got a friend, the husband of an old friend of mine, and who was he's a retired professor at Bethany College in West Virginia. But he called me once, and he said, "I can't believe I turned this on, and there you were." That was the thing he was most excited about that I've ever done. That it was so much fun being on Prairie Home Companion. What a trip. That man writes that show every week. He writes almost every word that's spoken on that show.
Almost. And they do, 35, 40 new shows a year?
Yes.
It's incredible.
Yes, and he does a 20-minute monologue with no notes. No notes. Every week, a new monologue for 9 months of the year. That in and of itself is pretty extraordinary. No, it was great. We had a great time.
Well, you'll have a great time at Memphis. It's tonight. This is Thursday?
This
then
is
Friday night, two shows Saturday, two shows Sunday.
Correct,
right,
yes.
Right.
Where can people find out more, Jody?
WaltonArtsCenter.org for tickets or 443-5600, or you can come down and visit us at the box office. The lobby is decked out, and we do have a gallery exhibition in the Joy Pratt Markham Gallery, which is free and open to the public. Parking is free before 2 p.m., so if you want to come down and get your tickets, go for it.
Jody, thank you. Bill?
Great. A pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Some people say I'm just a fool, a man with nothing to show. They say I got the charm of a mule, but there's something them people don't know.
As spring approaches, the festival calendar begins to become busy. Mulberry Mountain will host Wakarusa and Thunder on the Mountain this spring. Northwest Arkansas will be the backdrop for the third Artisphere presented by Walton Arts Center. And south of us, in Hot Springs, there will be the unique Valley of the Vapors Festival. A new documentary about the do-it-yourself inspiration for the International Festival will be screened this weekend at Nightbird Books in Fayetteville. Ozarks at Large's Katie Henriksen has more.
Hot Springs, Arkansas, more known for its hot baths and its blues bands, is a hotbed of experimental and independent music each spring now because of the Valley of the Vapors Independent Music Festival, founded by Bill Solider in 2005. There's a new documentary out about the festival, and it's being screened at Nightbird Books in Fayetteville Saturday night at 7:30 p.m. I had a chance to talk to founder Bill Solider about the festival and the documentary.
For a student film, I don't even like to say student film because it looks and sounds and feels great. It was so well shot and it was such a great idea that you automatically would think student film would mean just something that's just sort of, you know, subpar. But it's excellent. It's so well done and well thought out. And it is a music festival documentary, and it does include lots of performance and lots of band interviews. But the story that they ended up bringing out is why this festival is special. Why this tiny little festival in this tiny little town is special. And as it turns out, it's because the people that put it on are so excited about doing it once a year, and they go there an extra mile. You know, they bake cookies for the bands, and they welcome them, and they put them up in their houses, and this like this like warm embrace they give to the bands is such a surprise to the bands. You know, and it's just, and there's so many great points in the festival where these bands are just so surprised at the Hot Springs hospitality. And that's where the story really, like, rings true.
One purpose of the Valley of the Vapors Independent Music Festival and Low Key Arts is to get youth involved in the DIY culture, which is exactly what happened when Drew Martin began attending festival shows as a junior in high school. Now 20 years old, Drew booked virtually all the bands for this year's Valley of the Vapors Festival, which takes place March 18th through 24th.
The best part really about the festival is actually putting it on. Even though that week is super stressful, it's super amazing to see all the work that Bill and I and all the volunteers put into it come to fruition and create this amazing event for people to come to. And that pretty much, well, I honestly, personally, have never heard anyone say anything bad about the festival.
Just exactly how does a vibrant independent music festival end up in Hot Springs, Arkansas? Bill Solider is a veteran musician and has worked in the industry for years. He grew up in Chicago and toured all over the world in his band, the Blue Meanies, in the 1990s.
There's a little bit of a backstory. You know, I was born and raised in Chicago, and before moving to Arkansas, I had played in bands and traveled all around the world and did it professionally. And following my active music career, I went into the industry and worked for a small record label in Chicago. So I was fully immersed in music. And my partner of 21 years, Shay, and I decided to move back to our hometown, which is Hot Springs, to raise a family. And I had a job lined up, and it's beautiful here, of course. And I was withdrawing is what happened. You know, I was like going out to shows and so immersed in the Chicago music scene every day that coming to Hot Springs, there was really no underground independent music. You know, it was mostly bar bands and blues clubs. That was about it. So I was really just kind of jonesing for some music. So I had a friend who was headed down to Austin. Her name is Nora O'Connor, and she said, "Hey, I'm going to Austin for Southwest Southwest, and I'd like to come and see you guys. Maybe you could book a show." So I booked a show for her around South by Southwest, and word got out to my friends in Chicago that I was going to put a show together, that I literally, without even trying, had booked a five-day festival back in 2005 within 2 weeks. It was done. It was just like, okay, I just did something here. And that was sort of easy because there's thousands of bands headed to Austin. So the markets to and from Austin are just saturated with bands. So people are just looking for anything to do on their way, you know, to Austin or home from Austin. So it became very easy. But then the next part was, okay, I've got these bands, but is there an audience in Hot Springs that will appreciate it? So that first show, I'll never forget, there was a local band that kicked off the very first VOV. They were called Drove, and they were kind of an instrumental, very kind of sort of psychedelic droning band. And kids came out. There was a great crowd, but all the kids were sitting, on the floor. They're just all sitting around. I was like, oh no, they don't know what to do. They've never had a show before. I mean, certainly they'd all been to shows in Little Rock or downtown Dallas or whatever, but it was not the reaction I was expecting. I thought they'd all be standing up and, you know, cheering the band on. And I was like, oh, this isn't going to work. And then the first band played that was from out of town, and I believe it was a band called Hanale, and they were from California. And when they started, they were a bit more energetic. Well, all those kids at that very first show stood up and just kind of lost their minds. They just had so much energy built up and have never really had many, many shows, or if at all, shows in Hot Springs, and they just sort of went wild. And I knew at that point, okay, Hot Springs has a need for it. And then, so that was 2005, and now we're approaching the ninth year here in 2014, and it seems to be going well.
Now boasting 42 bands in 5 days, representing 8 countries, including the U.S., Solidar insists to maintain exactly what keeps this festival so vital, the personal connection.
It has to be said that, you know, we try to keep the VOV, you know, as humble as possible, and we're trying not to grow it to be, you know, a larger thing like, you know, Wakarusa or Bonnaroo. We want to keep it as intimate as possible so that festival goers and musicians and artists alike can interact and communicate with each other. And you know, there aren't 10 or 20 foot barriers between the stage and the audience. And you can literally just reach out and, you know, touch an artist. And it becomes great not only for the people to go that want to talk to a traveling musician from, say, Ireland or Iran, but it's great for those musicians who just want to say, hey, what's going up and what's going down in Arkansas? And it really makes it special. So we are growing, but we're trying to keep it small.
The free screening of the Valley of the Vapors Independent Music Festival documentary is at Nightbear Books on Dixon Street in Fayetteville this Saturday night at 7:30 p.m., For more information on this year's festival, which runs March 15th through the 19th, visit valleyofthevapors.com. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Katie Henriksen.
KUAF is supported by Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, celebrating the American spirit by uniting the power of art with the beauty of nature. The museum opens at 11 a.m. daily, except Tuesdays. More information is available online at crystalbridges.org.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Bentonville, Rogers, Fort Smith, and Lee Creek.
Lee Creek, which is probably higher at this point than it was 24 hours ago.
As it's raining right now.
I hope so. You know what? I said we didn't have time for a question. We're going to give away 2 pairs of Malco movie passes. You have the question.
I do have the question. So David Bryan is the composer and co-lyricist of Memphis, the musical.
Yes.
It's at the Walton Arts Center right now. But he is also the member of which 80s flavored rock band?
There you go. What rock band was he a member of?
Right.
The guy who wrote the music for Memphis.
You may answer at ozarksatlarge@gmail.com.
I will tell you, this is not a hint for many people, but that won't work. Never mind. It would just confuse people. So never mind. Let's see. You and I will be together on Sunday.
We will.
Weekend Ozarks at Large, when you're going to talk about boa constrictors.
Right.
Year of the Snake.
I know.
Chinese New Year. So you went to the Reptile Museum. That and more on Sunday at 9 a.m. Antoinette Grajeda will be back with me tomorrow for a brand new edition of Ozarks at Noon. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Thanks for listening.
Happy Thursday.